Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome back to another episode of Tailgate Till May. I'm your host, Stephen Gorgie, and I'm joined by my friend and co-host, Brian Kaufman. Today, we're diving into Week 13, Rivalry Week. But first, a reminder, you can subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcast, Apple, Spotify, Google, and more. If you like the show, we'd love if you leave us a five-star review. You can also find me on Twitter, at Gorgon Sports, where I give out all my picks each week. And now, transitioning to college basketball season, we'll start giving out some college basketball picks. Last week, the final week of the regular season, 4-5, missed my money line parlay by a single leg. Thanks a lot, Caleb Williams. Thanks a lot, Notre Dame offense. But for the year, 62-57 against the spread. So hanging on over 500 there. And I've won two of my money line parlays. So up 9.8 units on those money line parlays. Gonna finish out strong with championship weekend. Got to get over that 53% threshold. That's my goal. Already have some early picks up on Twitter, so be sure to check those out. Lines are moving fast, and I'll be giving out more as the week goes on. Brian, how are you? How was your week 13? How was your Thanksgiving?
Thanksgiving was great. It was great to be around family, to watch a ton of good football. Week 13, I think it lived up to its billing, man. A lot of teams played themselves, you know, continued to play themselves more firmly into playoff positioning. And as we'll get into, a few teams, you know, kind of gave up control of their own destiny and or simply eliminated themselves. So this is that time of year, right, where it all is looking ahead towards the playoff. And I think we had a lot of results that are worth diving into. None bigger than simply the game.
Yes, that was the game of the week. It is the game, and that is Michigan obliterating Ohio State 45-23 to win the Big Ten East for the second consecutive year. Ryan Day now has a losing record against Michigan and Jim Harbaugh. My, how the tables have turned. So, Brian, I have a really simple question for you as we get into this game. What was your biggest takeaway for Michigan's win?
So I think that you can go kind of macro with this, or you can go super specific with it. And I think I have a feeling you might go a tad more macro, so I'm going to go. I know we've talked a little bit about J.J. McCarthy all season, right? And even when we both were on the record picking Ohio State in the game, a lot of it had to do with, do you trust J.J. McCarthy? The answer is no. So my biggest takeaway from this game, and why I feel different about Michigan, even as soon as the playoff this season and what they're able to accomplish, is that J.J. McCarthy can make all the plays, man. I doubted it all season, and he stuck it to us. And you could even go a step further, honestly, and say kind of all of Michigan's offensive playmakers. Like I think we also had a discussion on this very podcast about, wait, somebody said they were impressed with Michigan's wide receivers. I have not thought that a single time watching them this season. And a lot of them stepped up. Cornelius Johnson, 150-plus yards and a couple of long touchdowns. But man, J.J. McCarthy to make his first start in such a big environment on the road. You know, he only completed 50% of his passes, but he was just in control. When he put his head down for the rushing touchdown in the fourth quarter, it was like, oh, snap, man, he's here. He's here. And so, you know, my takeaway is, honestly, I wrote off Michigan as a national title contender this year, and I don't know that you can safely do that now. They played a lot of the game without Blake Corum. He's the guy who's been in Heisman talks for them this year. And, you know, ho-hum, Donovan Edwards, 200-plus yards, a couple of long touchdowns sealed it. And obviously, it's nice to have a five-star guy step in there when your Heisman candidate goes down. So just really, really, really impressed with what they were able to do. I mean, second straight year hanging 40 plus on Ohio State. That's a big deal. That wasn't happening. So the offensive side of the ball for Michigan was a huge takeaway for me.
Big plays were no doubt the story of the game, Brian. J.J. McCarthy, a 69-yard touchdown pass, a 75-yard touchdown pass, and a 45-yard touchdown pass. That's just not something we had seen from him or this Michigan offense, those big, explosive, game-breaking plays outside of the running game throughout the season. But like you said, McCarthy stepped up, their receiving core stepped up, and they really proved to both you and me that they have what it takes to beat that Ohio State defense deep, that they can beat anybody deep, that they can generate those explosive plays, that it's not all about Blake Corman, the running game. However, like you said, Donovan Edwards added a lot with a dang club on his hand in the running game too. So it seemed to me, and J.J. McCarthy even said it after the game, that Ohio State was selling out to take away their identity, to take away their run game, and they made them play. They made them pay. And I didn't think that McCarthy had it in him to make them pay, and he proved me wrong, and he proved everybody who had doubted him wrong. And that is the reason that Jim Harbaugh decided to make a change from a quarterback who led him to a Big Ten title in the college football playoff last year to J.J. McCarthy. We saw it here in this game. I'm not so sure that we saw it the previous however many weeks he was the starter after they kind of settled that competition, but it was all worth it for Saturday in the Horseshoe against Ohio State. He showed everybody what Jim Harbaugh saw on him. So kudos to J.J. McCarthy. Kudos to Michigan. Kudos to Jim Harbaugh. You can't say enough about just the way the perception of this program has changed over the past two seasons with these two big wins over Ohio State. And I think what everybody is presuming as a back-to-back Big Ten title, I mean, Purdue's there staying in the way, but if last year's title game against Iowa is any indication, it should be a romp for Michigan, and then another trip to the college football playoff. So my biggest takeaway from this game, Brian, is that there has been a changing of the guard in the Big Ten. Ohio State is not the team that we have to pick to win the Big Ten starting next year, right? That right belongs to Michigan now. They have earned it, they have proved it, and they now deserve the benefit of the doubt moving forward. It is not Ohio State that deserves the benefit of the doubt. They did for years and years and years, but that's gone. Michigan's crushed them 2 years in a row, and they did it maybe not exactly the same way. I mean, they did get a lot on the ground, but it was very similar. I thought those games were really pretty similar in a lot of ways. Year over year, it wasn't quite the same. Like, Ohio State just doesn't have it physically like Michigan does, but it was like, you watch that game, can you tell me anything where you're like, Ohio State is clearly better than Michigan? Because going into the game, I would have said it's quarterback and receiving threats. Coming out of that game, yes, I still think Ohio State has the better receiving core. Yes, if I was starting a team right now, I would still take CJ Stroud, but not so much that it prevented Michigan from winning the game. So I just come away from that game saying there's not an area on that field where Ohio State was clearly better than Michigan yesterday. Can you name me one?
No, I can't, which is why I think you're onto something with the changing of the guard. I think that they were dominant in all fashions, and it's fascinating. I'm curious if you buy into the idea. I read an article before the game about this, about the rest of the Big Ten should be rooting for Michigan, and the idea being like Ohio State had been that like solo team that every single program was headed after. I'm interested in your thoughts on that, because like, and obviously we're going to get into some other stuff later on, but like, I don't know that, okay, if Michigan replaces Ohio State at the top, does that really mean anything for the rest of the conference? Like, I don't know that I necessarily am on board with that.
I would like to say that this is a huge thing for the rest of the conference, but I don't think it is. If anything, I think it's even worse, because I think what you now have is a two-headed monster at the top in Michigan and Ohio State. Because I still think if I just said there's been a change in the guard and Michigan deserves the benefit of the doubt and Ohio State doesn't, it's not because Ohio State is bad. It's because Michigan has stepped up their game to a new level. So now you have these two schools that are head and shoulders above the rest of the conference, whereas in years past, maybe an Iowa team gets into that Big Ten championship game, or a Wisconsin team can get into that Big Ten championship game and possibly pull an upset over Ohio State. And now if we make the assumption that we're going to be getting rid of divisions in the Big Ten going forward, it's hard to envision much of a future where these are not the top two teams in the conference for the foreseeable future. Now, Jim Harbaugh seemingly flirts with the NFL on a year in and year out basis. I mean, as of last year, he was interviewing with the Vikings, right? And that was actually part of the reason I thought, like, okay, maybe he came here, he accomplished what he wanted to accomplish, which was beat Ohio State, get them to a college football playoff, and he realized, that's as far as I can take it here, I'm out. Now I in retrospect, I was clearly wrong about that. I mean, I think anybody as competitive as him probably once he had a lot of success at the NFL level, he nearly won a Super Bowl. I wouldn't be surprised if that's something he still aspires to do. But, you know, short of Harbaugh leaving, which is possible, I don't see how these are not the top two teams for the foreseeable future.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. Okay. So to bring it back to present day, yeah, top two teams in the conference for sure, and we'll get into where Ohio State goes from here and where they might fall and what their playoff prospects this year still look like. Can you make a reasonable case that Michigan should be the number one team in the country? Because I don't know about you, but is there a better win out there in college football this year?
Ohio State on the road? I mean, it's got to be. At worst, I don't think you can say Ohio State still is worse than the fifth or sixth best team in the country.
Right.
Right. So I think that is, I think to Michigan's credit, they have beat the teams that are their closest competition, Penn State and Ohio State, by 20 plus points each. And I think that speaks a lot, regardless of how weak their non-conference schedule is. And they've been much maligned for that. I think you can say, if you take into account the way that they have pretty much thoroughly dominated their schedule, including the two best teams they faced on their schedule, one of which was on the road. Yeah, I mean, I don't see, if they're not number one, they're number two. They can't be lower than the number two team in the country. So I would have no problem. And at the end of the day, in the college football playoff, like, I feel like at least this year, it's being number one and two and just staying. Georgia, I don't need to dance around it. Georgia and Michigan just staying on opposite sides of the bracket from each other are really, that's really what matters this year, right? One or two probably doesn't matter a whole lot, depending how you think of TCU, I guess, and USC and whatever other contenders are out there. But yeah, they have as good a case as anybody for the number one team in the country. And I'll go as far as to say, I don't think there's any reason they shouldn't be the number one team in the country. I mean, I'm impressed with Georgia. I think I would still say Georgia is the best team in the country if I was power rating it. But based on what they've done, I'll put up the Ohio State and Penn State wins against what's Georgia's two best wins, Tennessee at home, and what's the second best win?
Still Oregon, maybe?
Oregon. Okay, Oregon. Oregon on a neutral. I mean, I take Penn State over. Let me put it this way. I take Ohio State over Tennessee right now, and I take Penn State over Oregon right now.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think, like, my whole thing is I think you nailed it with, like, we're kind of like getting more nitty gritty than we need to. Like, back when Tennessee had the best resume and they were about to play Georgia, and it was like, yeah, you could make Tennessee number one. And my only point on why I kept Georgia there that week, to be honest, was just like, I haven't moved off them. They have been impressive. They haven't done anything to not deserve it. But I like what you said about, you know, there's no reason Michigan can't be number one. My reason is just that Georgia's been a solid number one ever since like week one or two. And I'll move them off when they do something that kind of deserves them to be moved off. But I think you're right in breaking down the wins and stuff like that. So I don't know, like, is it getting ahead of myself to ask you, like, can Michigan compete for a national championship this season? Like, is that where we're at now after this weekend?
It has to be. And I think it really comes down to one thing for me. It's, can the Michigan offense replicate this kind of explosive performance against a defense not named Ohio State, against a defense named Georgia? And because Ohio State has improved a lot defensively year over year. You know, Jim Knowles came in. I think he really addressed a lot of the gaps that they had, as much as a single defensive coordinator can in a single year. But the Georgia defense is not the Georgia defense of last year, which is maybe the best defense I've ever watched in 30 years of watching college football. But they are still, according to SP Plus, the best defense in the country. They're a defense that generated, what, 5-6 sacks against Tennessee in that game. So that's the biggest question for me, is can McCarthy and the Michigan offense replicate this explosive performance against Georgia? And I'd like to find out. I still lean no. This game makes me lean a lot closer to yes, but if I had to put my money down right now, I'd bet it the same way I bet it in the semifinal last year, which is dogs, dogs, dogs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm with you. And it's funny because, like, you watch these games and I never know when to pull the trigger on being a believer or not, right? It's like, why don't I think Michigan can beat them? Well, I mean, it's Georgia. It's a different breed, right? But, like, I hope we get the chance to see. I'm, like, pretty pumped on the idea of that being a national championship matchup now, because I think, like, Michigan has earned the right to be talked about in that conversation. If I was willing to say at the beginning of the year, I said, I think Ohio State's going to win the national championship, and they just did that to that team, well, yeah, Ohio State was going to have to go through one of those SEC powers to get there. Why can't Michigan be given that opportunity? So we'll see. But, man, just a heck of a performance, and just one that I can't say I saw coming.
So, Brian, you said you hope you get to see that game. Let's talk about what your ideal playoff would be. If you were picking the playoff, not who deserves it necessarily, but if you're just saying, this is what I hope happens and what I hope I get to see as a college football fan, what are you hoping for?
So not predicting this weekend's outcomes, none of that. Just what am I hoping for? Yeah, I like a combo. If I can be honest with you, I don't think they're really, like, how many playoffs have we gone in being like, all four teams have a real shot at this thing? I don't think it's that common, right? And so if I think that Georgia and Michigan are the two best teams by a decent amount, and I think that I'd like to see them match up in a championship game, what I'd also like to see are some teams get shots that don't get shots. So for that reason, I would be absolutely fine with TCU winning this weekend and being the 3 seed, and USC winning this weekend and being the 4 seed. And I think that would be a really fun playoff. I think USC, with the way that they play offense, going up against Georgia in a 1-4 would be cool. And TCU, obviously, like, they're kind of a wild card to me, like, playing against some of these, like, really great historic programs like Michigan or Georgia. To me, that's, at this point in the season, that's what I want to see. I have no issue with Ohio State not going in. I could make an argument that I think Ohio State's still one of the best four teams, but it's fine for me if they, from a fan perspective, if they're not in it this year.
It's fine with me too. And I was kind of hoping you wouldn't say those four teams, because I think that's exactly what I want. I would love to see Georgia versus a Caleb Williams, Lincoln Riley-led USC team. I think USC is 1 year away from truly, at least 1 year away from truly being able to compete for a national title. However, I think that when you look at what Caleb Williams has done, he's probably the Heisman Trophy winner. He's one of the most elusive quarterbacks. The way Caleb Williams moves in the pocket and escapes pass rushers and makes things happen, keeps his eyes downfield, finds receivers, runs when he needs to. I just find him to be one of the most fun players to watch in college football. And it kind of has me thinking about, could we get a, if we get a Georgia-USC game, could we get a little bit of a repeat of that Georgia-Oklahoma fantastic Rose Bowl from back early in the Kirby Smart era? I think Baker Mayfield was Oklahoma's quarterback at that point. But, I mean, that was an unreal game, a high-scoring game. And, you know, a lot of the key players, at least from a coaching staff perspective, are now at the Georgia staff, still at Georgia, and Lincoln Riley and his staff is now at USC. So it kind of a little bit of echoes of that, which I think would be a ton of fun. And then I think Michigan TCU would be a really interesting matchup. It would give TCU a real chance against the type of team that everybody says they can't possibly beat, that they're not good enough to be on the same field with. It's man ball versus, you know, this air raid, throw it a million times a game, explosive offense. If you're in Texas, you love it. If you're somewhere in Big Ten or SEC country, you probably say it's not real football. And so I think I love contrasting styles. So I think for that reason, I would really like to see TCU Michigan. And to your point as well, I think the TCU fan base would absolutely talk about a fan base that would show up and show out for a college football playoff appearance. Yeah, give me TCU. It's fun to get new blood. And that's looking at a playoff without Ohio State, without Clemson, and without Alabama. I mean, when did you ever think we would see all three of those teams not in the playoff?
I didn't. And for those to be the teams too, I mean, I know our silly little wins pool isn't the end all be all, but if you talk about Michigan and TCU, you're talking about the third Big Ten team drafted, even though some of us would have taken them second, against a Big 12 team that wasn't selected. I mean, it's like, it doesn't get much more fun than that for me. I feel like you're some fresh blood. Like you said, it's fun. I don't think we're going to be missing anything, and we're going to get in predictions. But if TCU and or USC loses, though, I do think, you know, the Ohio States, the Alabamas are the next on the doorstep. And so we'll see. We're not there quite yet, but I agree with you. That's what I want to see.
Yeah, it could get real messy. And a team that could still benefit from that mess is the loser in this game, Ohio State. So we have barely talked about the Buckeyes here. We got to talk about them a little bit, Brian, because this is, as Gus Johnson likes to say, the world famous Ohio State Buckeyes. When the world famous Ohio State Buckeyes go down, you got to talk about what went wrong with them. So why did this happen for them yet again? I mean, we already talked about the explosive plays that were generated. Is it just a matter of they need to continue to get better talent on the defense again? Is there something offensively that's not working for them? What is the deal with Ohio State? And why have they now become the team that can't beat their rival?
Yeah, I wish I had an awesome answer. I think like Michigan became exactly what Jim Harbaugh has always wanted them to be. And I feel like that is a punch you in the mouth, and that's how he determined he was going to be able to beat Ohio State, and he built that program, and now 2 years ago, 2 years in a row, they've done that. Where to go from here for Ohio State is such a tough question. I mean, CJ Stroud's unbelievable, and he's going to leave school never winning the game as a starter and never winning a Big 12 title as a starter, a Big 10 title as a starter. I don't know that it's necessarily offensive issues. I mentioned earlier, I mean, back-to-back years giving up 40 to Michigan, like, this is just not what they're supposed to do. And you mentioned Jim Knowles. They hired him to fix the defense when they got trounced in the game last year. And I think you nailed it. I think for the majority of the year, it worked. I think it's just I don't anticipate that they're going to all of a sudden sink into obscurity and win 8 games a year all of a sudden. Like, I think they're right there. I do think they need to be careful and take a long look in the mirror, but it's going to be a long offseason in Columbus. I don't have the answers, but the good news is I don't have to have them, but Ryan Day better figure him out.
Yeah, I mean, if you just go and take a look at Ryan Day's college football reference page, it seems ridiculous to even have to be talking about what should this guy do next, given the success he's had there. It, over 5 years, and that includes his time in 2018, kind of filling in for Urban Meyer, he's 45-5. He's lost five games over five seasons. You know, what is that? 45 out of 50. That's a 90%. He wins 90% of his games, but he hasn't won the last 2 years the game that matters. And it's really become a one game season for Ohio State. It all comes down to the last game of the season, that Michigan game. You know, if you heard him talk at all during the week, I just don't know where he goes from here, because the way he talked during the week, it was as if this game, the loss last year, had been weighing on him for an entire year. He had talked about how they had changed their practice habits to kind of better prepare for this game, how they had changed their focus, how they had changed the things that they have done throughout the season, how they had carried those scars with them throughout the whole year, and it was their chance for the redemption. And Brian, I wholeheartedly bought into it. I was big on Ohio State -7.5. I thought they have done all the right things over the course of the last year. They have the better quarterback. They have home field. They have that explosive offense that Michigan just can't keep up with. And it didn't happen. And it's like, where do you go from here? They brought in the new defensive coordinator, and I think it was a good hire, and I think it worked in a lot of ways. And if the answer is just you have to be patient and let them develop more defensive talent. And I mean, it's like, you could say, at least last year, you could say like, okay, they don't have a Chase Young on this defense, right? But is JTT not at that level? I mean, look what that guy did in the Penn State game. He's at that level. I don't remember hearing his name a ton yesterday. So maybe it's just a matter of, they will continue. I mean, they are still recruiting well, as they always do, and they just need to get more JTTs in their lineup, and in a year or 2 years, it will completely have flipped, and they'll be stocked with talent. But you certainly, it's tough. I mean, you don't give up on Ryan Day, right? There's no world which you should give up on Ryan Day, but if his comments this previous week are any indication of how heavily last year's loss weighed on him, I cannot imagine how heavily this year's game will weigh on him, knowing that he is doing everything except the one thing he has to do to be a successful coach at the Ohio State University. And like you said, I'm glad I don't have to have the answer, because it's a tough one. It's like, what you want to, okay, so should I go get the best quarterback in the country? Check. Should I go get the best receiving core in the country? Check. Should I get studs? Should I get a stud on the defensive line, the number one overall recruit in the country? Check. It's like, what else can you do? And as commentators and fans, I feel like we pick at all these little, maybe meaningless, unnecessary things, but it's like, that's what you're grasping at when you're looking at a team that has all the talent in the world and just can't get over that hump.
Yeah, I don't know that it's some massive change, right? I think there's probably a lot of Buckeye fans and message boards out there that want something totally different. This is a team, like you said, they're still on the precipice, and spells like this happen. So I'm just interested to see what he does. I think, like, last year when he made the switch to Jim Knowles, that we saw that coming. Like, Kerry Combs was going to be gone early. I think he lost play calling duties during the season, and it was like, this is a change is going to happen. This year, it's a little bit more difficult to pinpoint what you would want him to do. And obviously that means I don't see anything super drastic happening, but it'll be interesting, because you can't have a third. I don't want to put words in your mouth, that you were joking when you said it, but like, if he loses to Michigan a third year in a row, there's going to be calls for it. It's a wild time in Columbus.
Now, let me ask you a question as I'm thinking about, like, what could they possibly do? There was a time when Urban Meyer was there that Ezekiel Elliott was the bell cow, you know, within that Ohio State offense. They were, he was toting the rock all the time, a hard runner, a guy who could, if they had to win a game running the ball, they could win the game running the ball. Is it possible that that's just a dimension of their offense? Not that Mayan Williams is a good back. They have good backs. But I don't know. Do they have it in them to go and win a game where they run the ball 50 times in a game? Does that need to be a dimension that they add to that offense?
You might be onto something. I mean, I think, like you said, Mayan Williams is good. Travion Henderson's good. I feel like every week this season, it's been a little bit of like one of them was out or the other one was out. It feels like they haven't had the full complement of backs. And his name's escaping me, but the guy who went off against Maryland wasn't either of those guys. So Hayden, I think it was. So you might be onto something. I mean, I think it's possible. They did, I mean, in that game, just because I pulled it up to grab his name, like they had a back run 27 times for 145 yards and 3 scores against Maryland. Obviously, Maryland's not Ohio
State.
But
that's Maryland.
Yeah, yeah. So I think maybe you might be onto something. It does feel like it's been a minute since they've been able to. I guess maybe they seem a little bit more one-dimensional. It's funny because I would have said that the one-dimensional offense coming into this game was Michigan and their run game, but maybe they did expose something on Ohio State and what they're able to do on that side of the ball.
All right. Well, 30 minutes in, we've talked about the game because it was the game and the biggest game of the weekend, and it was well worth our time, but let's move on. Brian, I want to get to Clemson, a team that really shot itself in the foot over the weekend, and in a situation where that number four spot in the college football playoff is seemingly wide open right now, blew a pretty big opportunity, falling to rival South Carolina by a point and really eliminating themselves from CFP contention. But what I want to talk about here is I think we are at a defining moment of Dabo Swinney's career. And no, this is not me saying that if Dabo Swinney doesn't adapt and change, that he's not going to go down as a very good coach or even a great coach, because he's already a great coach. He's a national championship winning coach, and not just a national championship winning coach, a national championship winning coach, a two-time national championship winning coach at Clemson, which is, for all of its success, is not necessarily a program that was just tailor-made to win national championships. So I want to preface this by saying Dabo Swinney is a great coach. However, the difference between a great coach and a coach that goes down as the best of all time, a la Nick Saban, a la Mike Krzyzewski, is the ability to change and adapt as the game changes and adapts. And if you look at Krzyzewski, a guy who was ahead of his time in how he played in regard to shooting threes, right? At a time when three-point shooting was not like it is today in the Steph Curry era, where it's all about getting to the rim. His team played in a way where they shot a lot of threes. And then as the one-and-done era started to come along, he changed and adapted his recruiting philosophy, and a program that basically only had guys that stayed 4 years became a program that was a one-and-done program. And I think that is why Mike Krzyzewski is the best college basketball coach of all time. Nick Saban, I think it's been very well documented how he changed his offensive philosophy to go to more of a spread game. He brought in Lane Kiffin, kind of changed the whole way they play offense at Alabama, and that is why he is the best college football coach of all time. Can Dabo Swinney do that now in this new era of college football? He doesn't like to take transfers, Brian. He only likes to promote from within, pretty much, and they've lost a guy in Brent Venables on the defensive side who was there forever. So I think we're at a critical juncture in Dabo's career now that, you know, last year was a 3-loss season, this year is a 2-loss season, and those are not bad results by any means, especially at Clemson. Clemson is a place where it's a good program, but it's never was a great program until the last 10 years. So everything he is doing is still good, and he is still a great coach. But if he wants to be the best coach of all time, or one of the top three, four, five coaches of all time, he will have to find a way to change and adapt to this new era. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see if he can do it.
I think he's the guy, correct me if I'm wrong, when you're committed to Clemson, you're not allowed to take visits to other schools without decommitting. Things like that, where like he seems to have like a tight group there, and he wants it to be this family vibe. But in this era where, you know, players want to feel seen and heard, that's the type of thing I think you need to adjust to as well, right? That's always kind of come off a little bit, dare I say, Edsel-esque, to like try to maintain that level of like deep control over the individuals that are coming into your program. And so I think that's a great point. And I think it's great that you caught that at this point and not, you know, retroactively, because I think you're right. They've been great for a while and it's been a minute now. I also think, you know, personnel-wise, like, you know, reading an article here, they're sticking with DJ for the ACC title game, right? He did not play well. Like, he played poorly. I think he was 8 of 29, if memory serves. He threw for less than 100 yards. And they're sticking with him. And so, maybe we're not at practice every day. Maybe Cade Klubnik's not as ready as we thought. But, yeah, I think it's a fair point to say, and I do like if they pull that out, they might be the front runner for that four seed if they win the ACC championship. And so, speaking of teams, coming off our conversation about Ryan Day and coaches that need to take a long look in the mirror this offseason, we'll see what Dabo does. But you make a great point.
You know, I just wonder if this isn't a time where we look back and we say, between 2015 and 2020, Clemson won two national championships. They never finished worse than fourth in the postseason AP poll. That is an unbelievable six-year run right there, right? But I just think if Dabo doesn't find a way to adapt, in 20 years, 30 years from now, people will look back at that Clemson run like they look at the Colorado run in the 90s. They're like, oh, Colorado was a national championship program. Wow, that's kind of weird. And I'm not saying Clemson will fall to the level of current day Colorado, which is a bottom feeder in the Pac-12, right? Like, don't get me wrong. I'm sure this could easily be clipped to make it seem like I'm just bashing Clemson like crazy. But, you know, that's not my point. My point is that things change quickly in college football. We just finished talking about how the Ohio State-Michigan rivalry has completely flipped on its head over a two-year period. Things change quickly, and I would be slightly nervous if I was a Clemson fan that things are changing for the Clemson program. And it will be fun to watch if Dabo can figure it out. I don't know if he can. I'm not going to sit here and make a prediction. I wouldn't bet against him because I've said time and time again, I think he has done the most impressive job of any coach that I've ever seen, because it's a hell of a lot harder to win a national championship at Clemson than it is at Alabama, or it is at Georgia, or it is at a lot of other schools. Like, Clemson, again, is a good, not great historical program. So I think Dabo Swinney is a fantastic coach, but will he be the best coach of all time? This is when we're going to find out. All right, you know, Brian.
Yeah,
go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I like, and not to continue this conversation too much more, but I wonder if he is benefiting from the fact that like nobody's nipping at his heels in the ACC, right? Like you can stay stagnant if you're Clemson and pretty consistently be the ACC champion. I know you're talking about national titles. You're talking about trying to become the best coach ever. But that is an interesting wrinkle here where, like, Michigan was nipping at Ohio State's heels and figured it out. And I don't think that – I mean, North Carolina's lost a few in a row going to the ACC championship game. They're not really, like, in danger. But you're right. Things happen quickly. So I think it's a fair point.
Well, it'll be interesting to see with Florida State. Honestly, like, I have more hope than I've had in a long time that Florida State can actually be relevant on a national stage and a program that could actually compete with Clemson, because of anybody in the ACC, they're really truly the only program that I think can compete with Clemson from a myriad of perspectives. So, you know, they went 9-3 this year, a huge step up from what they've done in the past. And I think they're starting to turn a little bit of a corner. So it'll be interesting to see, maybe Florida State is the team that starts pushing them, and maybe somebody truly being on their heels is what it takes for Dabo to make some changes. So I think that's a great point. And I think that will be interesting to watch too, if Florida State can be that team. All right, let's quickly hit here on USC Notre Dame. USC takes down Notre Dame. Caleb Williams, probably going to be the Heisman Trophy winner. And USC has a chance to make the college football playoff in Lincoln Riley's first year. Brian, did you see all this coming from USC, or were you a little more skeptical at the start of the year?
It was just a little hesitant. I mean, thinking back to our preview shows, and it was like, they've got the talent. I don't think anybody doubted that. Lincoln Riley's been to the playoff as a coach before. Caleb Williams was very, very good when he stepped into Oklahoma last year. They got Jordan Addison, but Travis Dye. All these names I'm mentioning were not USC Trojans. And so I think there was this little hesitance of, it's going to take a minute to put it together. He did a good job putting a roster together for this season. And I think top quarter of the conference was a realistic expectation. Did I think that they would be playing in the Pac-12 championship for a trip to the playoff? No, I didn't. But hats off to them. And I think it's, you know, I agree with you that I think they're a year or two away. I mean, he's recruiting well. I think they're going to get there. But I'm surprised. I am. I'm not afraid to admit it. I mean, I think, and look at them now, right? They have a chance to avenge their only loss of the season en route to the playoff. So kudos to them. Caleb's unbelievable. And they did a really good job in what was a tougher than expected, or as tough as expected, Pac-12 top to bottom. And they're going to earn every bit of their playoff trip if they're able to beat Utah.
I think Lincoln Riley and Caleb Williams at USC, they had really just Lincoln Riley had the type of year that many people thought Marcus Freeman was going to have taking over at Notre Dame. Like, if you know, Lincoln had a lot of hype around him going to USC, but all you heard all season was everybody raving about Marcus Freeman. And I think he did a really nice job to rebound, to get that team to 8-4. I mean, if you'd asked me at the end of September, how's Notre Dame going to finish? I would not have guessed 8-4, honestly. I would not have guessed they beat Clemson. But it's also, they also lost to Marshall this season. They also lost to a really bad Stanford team who now David Shaw has resigned as their head coach. So it was not a perfect season by any means from a Notre Dame perspective. But I think, like, given all the offseason talk, you know, you would have thought that there was probably a better chance Notre Dame came into this game as the team that was 10-1 and had a chance to go to the college football playoff than USC. I think USC still had high expectations. Their over-under win total was set to 9.5. I bet the under. I did not believe they were going to turn it around this quickly, but I also now believe that Caleb Williams is my favorite quarterback to watch in all of college football. So with you, kudos to them. I want to see them in the playoff. I think it would be a ton of fun to see them in the playoff. And I think that they are going to be around for years to come. That much is clear to me, that there is a new power again on the West Coast. It's USC. They're going to be a playoff threat for years to come. Moving on, Brian, from two of the hottest candidates on the coaching market last season in Marcus Freeman and Lincoln Riley, to Luke Fickle, somebody who has been a hot name over the years, Cincinnati Bearcats head coach, soon to be new Wisconsin Badgers head coach. I think of the coaching news, this is the one that has stood out to me the most. What do you make of Luke Fickle to Wisconsin? Is it official? Have we confirmed this?
I mean, the team's Twitter account said, "Welcome at Coach Fick," and that's how I determine what's official these days, with his photo and everything. Yeah, I think I think it's a big time hire. I mean, he's been the guy who has come up in talks to get that major conference job sort of every year. I think I was sort of surprised, you know, I think it was going to take someone like this for them to not hire Jim Leonard. Like, I don't think Jim Leonard coached himself out of the permanent position. But when you can get a guy like this who really built a program at Cincinnati, I think you do it. I think it's a massively good hire. I think the Big Ten is better with a coach like that in it. You know, one thing we were talking about before we recorded, I'd love to get your thoughts on, is like, why this job? Why now? I mean, I think Wisconsin's been a good program for a long time, but Luke Fickell was very clear about not having interest in some other Big Ten jobs in the past. But I think it makes a lot of sense from the Midwest perspective, and he's familiar with the area. He's been in the conference. He's ready, obviously, to take that next step. And I think the program is at a position where he can do a lot of what he did at Cincinnati, like program building stuff. I think Wisconsin is ready for it. It's a good time for that for them, and a good changing of the guard. So I think it's a really strong hire.
Here's my biggest takeaway from this hire. It's that all the talk that we've had the last two off seasons about TV revenue and money is starting to rear its head. I think that is why, and we don't know the terms of the deal yet, but I'm just speculating here, that's why Nebraska is able to bring in a Matt Rhule, why Wisconsin's able to bring in a Luke Fickell. Because if you look at it just from a football perspective, I can very easily make the argument that there is a much clearer path to get to the college football playoff, a 12-team college football playoff, year in and year out, at Cincinnati in the Big 12 than there is being at Wisconsin in the Big 10. But we don't know the terms of the deal, but my feel here is that these mid-tier to upper-tier, and Wisconsin I would consider an upper-tier Big Ten job, probably in a tier below Ohio State, Michigan, and Penn State. I would consider those the top three jobs in the country, or in the conference, but I would put Wisconsin, Nebraska, and a few others on the tier below them. So the mid to high mid tier of the Big Ten, I think, is going to benefit more than anybody from the increase in revenue you're getting, because at some point there's a differentiator, right? And it's either the amount of money you can offer, the amount of money you can offer to the assistant coaching pool, which is a really big deal. I know for a lot of these head coaches, when they're looking at what jobs they're going to take is how are you going to take care of my staff? How are you going to take care of my assistants? Is there money for off the field, more off the field support? And the Big Ten and the SEC as well just has so much more revenue and is going to be able to offer so much more in the way of support. So even if the terms come out and we're like, oh, that's not an astronomical deal, it might still be making a difference in the amount of money that can be offered to the assistants, the amount of money available to increase support staff, off the field staff, facilities, etc. So I think that is my biggest takeaway from this. I think we're going to start to see jobs like Purdue, Iowa, that type of job, Minnesota, I think valued even more than a top tier job in the Big 12. And I don't think it's a good thing, honestly. I think it pushes us closer to that Super League that I'm so scared of happening. Because if you just look at it from a football perspective, you tell me if I'm wrong, but I think there's a clearer path to a college football playoff, a 12-team college football playoff at Cincinnati than there is at Wisconsin.
No, I think you're totally right. And I think you make a good point. I mean, we don't have the financial details of Fickell's contract, but we do for Matt Rhule at Nebraska, and he's making $72 million over his 8-year deal, which I believe comes out to $9 a year. And according to this article, which I have not vetted if it's accurate or not, that is third in the Big Ten behind Ryan Day and Mel Tucker. And Nebraska also paid out, by the way, that is a recently fired NFL coach that they hired. They paid out what the Panthers owed him too. And so it is wild, the money that's getting thrown around. But I would put Matt Rhule at Nebraska in terms of a good hire too. I think those are he's a known program builder, Temple and Baylor alike, flipping them around, not just flipping them around, but doing it relatively quickly and establishing his culture. So I think you make a great point about the kind of the how the landscape may change from a financial perspective. From a football perspective, I think both those Big Ten West teams got better with these hires, and I think it's an exciting time to try to turn your program around.
No doubt. I think they're both really good fits at those programs. I think, like you said, both programs got better and the Big Ten as a whole got better. And I think in a few years, I mean, that league's just going to get tougher and tougher. So talk about, you know, nipping at the top team's heels. I mean, this is when you have that middle tier that can start nipping at the heels, it's going to put a lot of pressure on Penn State. I mean, there's a world where Wisconsin passes Penn State, right? There's no reason that Wisconsin with Fickell can't be better than Penn State. That puts pressure on James Franklin. So I think the Big Ten is going to be a ton of fun to watch. And I think both these programs absolutely got better. However, they will not be playing in the college football playoff this year. Let's talk about who will, Brian. We will not have a show before the final selection is released. So let's give our predictions right now. Not what do you want to happen, what do you think is going to happen based on the results of championship weekend and what the committee does, who will be playing in this year's college football playoff?
All right. I've got Georgia. I've got them beating LSU. They're in either way. I won't give you a ton of explanation on each one because we've talked it a lot. I think Michigan beats Purdue. I think they're number two. I think TCU beats Kansas. They're number three. And I would say for the record, and we can go as much down this road as we want to, I think TCU deserves to be in, win or lose. I don't know that they will be. I think they deserve to be in, even if they lose to Kansas State. I've got them beating Kansas State. My wrench I'm throwing in it, the only team left that I can call out. Listen, we talked a little bit about how we feel it might be a year away. I'm picking Utah to win the game on Friday night. And I think if that happens, Ohio State is sitting the prettiest to get that fourth spot. So my prediction for the playoff is Georgia, Ohio State at 1-4, Michigan, TCU at 2-3.
Okay, so I got UJ and Michigan as well. Where we differ here, Brian, is I think USC wins that game. I think Utah's a different team at home. That game was really close in Salt Lake City. Utah made the plays needed to make to win, but I've already bet USC -1.5 in that game. I think being on the neutral field is the difference. And Utah, for whatever reason, just hasn't seemed to show up well away from home in big games. So give me USC. I think they win. I think they're in. I was very much with you at first that TCU deserves to be in with a win. I've been on TCU all year. I really like that team. I think they've been exciting. I think they've been fun. However, I don't know, looking at the resumes, comparing a one-loss TCU to a one-loss Ohio State, I just don't see it. What makes you think, make the case for me that one-loss TCU should be in over a one-loss Ohio State?
Yeah, I don't have it in front of me, but I think their strength of schedule, I believe Heather Dinich tweeted today. I mean, I think like a lot of their wins have kind of lost some of their credibility, right? Like when they beat Oklahoma State, that was a top 10 team, and that isn't the case anymore. When they beat Oklahoma, it felt like a bigger deal than beating Oklahoma feels like now. So I think you're on to something. Man, I just think like I want even making the conference championship game as an unbeaten to count for something. But I it's a fair point. It's a fair point. Now, this is, of course, with the loss. So I only had them in because I predicted that they'd win this game against Kansas State. But I guess I'm just saying it's the argument could be made that they deserve to be part of the conversation, win or lose. But listen, like I said it before, I'll say it again. I still think Ohio State's a top, one of the best four teams. And that's always what they say that they're searching for in the playoff. So I'd have no problem. I just think they're deserving.
Yeah, I don't understand strength of record extraordinarily well, but TCU is number one in ESPN's strength of record number. Ohio State is number four. As far as strength of schedule, TCU's 35, Ohio State's 34. So it seems like they're not significantly different schedules. But the Big 12, and I don't know, this is where it gets hard to parse. The Big 12 only has three teams, including TCU, that have nine wins or more. You got a lot of 7-5, 6-6 teams in there. And it's like, how good are those teams? Because I thought they were good teams. Like, I thought Oklahoma State was a good team, but they really didn't finish strong. Oklahoma's a 6-6 team. Like, I don't think we should say Oklahoma was a good team, because they were not a good team this year. But Kansas State is, and they'll have a chance to beat Kansas State for a second time. Baylor, 6-6. You guys know my thoughts on Texas pretty well. 8-4. I don't know. Just like, I look and I say, is there a win better than Penn State on the road? I don't think so. And maybe that's too simplistic, but I look at it like this. Penn State on the road is a better win than any win TCU has. Michigan, losing to Michigan is a better loss than losing to Kansas State. And that might be a simplistic way of looking at it, but I think they're top two wins. Like, which win is Kansas State a better win? Is Kansas State at home? Would you say Kansas State at home is TCU's best win?
Yeah, I think so.
Is that a
better maybe win? Maybe at Texas? I mean, that's got to be up there now.
At Texas, yeah. So are those two, if you say those are the top two, is that better than Penn State on the road and Notre Dame at home, do you think?
No, I don't think that's fair. I don't think that's true. But yeah.
And but the whole schedule has to count, right? Like, sure. I'm cherry picking the top two. I tend to focus more on the top of the schedule, the top wins, maybe then the entirety. And that's where that strength of record comes into play. So I don't know, Brian, that's where I stand. Like, and I just don't unfortunately see the committee giving Ohio State or giving TCU the benefit of the doubt over Ohio State. I think to feel good, they got to go win that game. Unfortunately for them, I don't think they're going to. I think Kansas State is actually going to win that game. I am holding a Kansas State 13-1 ticket from preseason, so I will also be rooting for the Wildcats, which kind of sucks because I want to see TCU, but I also want to win that bet. But I think Kansas State has a really good chance to win that game. They played them very tough the first time. They had a lead. They had a big lead in the first half. They had a chance to extend that lead late in the first half. They couldn't do it. They had some quarterback injuries in that game. They were down to their third stringer at one point. TCU came roaring back in the second half like they tend to do, and they got the win on the road. But put that in a neutral field. Kansas State's been playing great recently. I think they have that formula to make it the kind of game that is going to be tough for TCU to win. So I actually think Kansas State's going to win that game, and that's why I think it's even a discussion. So after all that, I think it's going to be Georgia, Michigan, USC, Ohio State. So we vary slightly there. We will see what happens. I think it's going to be really exciting either way. That is not what I want to happen. That is what I think is going to happen, though. So we will see. It's going to be an exciting one. Look, we've talked a lot about some national stuff today. We talked about the big games, but let's get to something that's near and dear to our hearts. Maryland Minute, Brian. The Terps finish out the season 7-5, get a big win at home over Rutgers, a shutout win to end the year, a nice way to cap off the season. And it's funny, 2 weeks ago I was down really bad, down horrendous after the Penn State loss, and I wrote down a question for you. I said, will 7-5 with an Ohio State loss and a Rutgers win be a success? Never asked it to you. Well, I'm asking you today because that's exactly what happened. They lost to Ohio State. They beat Rutgers. They're 7-5. How do you view this season for the Terps?
Yeah, I think I can't help but view it in parts, or should I say, like, look at it from different weeks' perspectives. So I think at the beginning of the year, I would have taken 7 regular season wins without a doubt. Another bowl year, hopefully maybe another bowl win. I can't tell you the last time they've won 7 regular season games. I think it's been at least a bit. And so that's great. But at 6-2, staring down Wisconsin and Penn State, it does feel like a bit of a letdown to lose those and to obviously Ohio State. Bouncing back, trouncing Rutgers, great. But I don't feel as good as I think maybe I should feel. And I think, and maybe you're going to get into this a bit, but I think it's because like this was supposed to be the good team, right? Like, I think when you're a program like Maryland, it is a bit cyclical and like you build up and you hope guys come back. And when you time it out perfectly that you have an experienced quarterback who just so happens to maybe be the best quarterback ever in the program and this receiving core that everybody's talking about and so on and so forth. And it's like, okay, like go ahead and put it together. For that year to be 7-5, I feel good, not great, I guess. Like I also feel like I'm ungrateful for something a little bit, but that's how I feel. That's where I'm at. I think like I'd feel a lot better at 8-4. How do you feel?
So 2014 was the last time Maryland had 7 regular season wins. It was the first year in the Big Ten. They haven't had 7 regular season wins since. They did get 7 last year with the bowl win. I'm exactly with you. I feel good, not great. I said it in text today. And the thing that's real frustrating for me, I shouldn't phrase it like that. Okay, here's everything that's good. Mike Loxley came in to a very, very difficult situation. And all he's done since he's been here is improve the program and improve things from going 3-9 in his first year, then the 2020 COVID year. I don't even count that year at all. I mean, they were 2-3 that year. They had a bunch of games canceled. Who cares? Whatever. They went 7-6 last year, and now they're 7-5, a chance to go 8-5. That is very clear, steady improvement. And at Maryland, making bowl games in back-to-back years is an accomplishment in this Maryland in the Big Ten era. It's hard to do. It's something they, in fact, have never done in back-to-back years in the Big Ten. They made back-to-back years in 2013-2014. That was their last year in the ACC and first year in the Big Ten, but never 2 consecutive years in the Big Ten. So that is an accomplishment in itself. Beating the teams you are supposed to beat is an accomplishment, or quote-unquote supposed to beat, that are equal to worse than you. That is an accomplishment, and we should never take that for granted at Maryland. So I am happy about that. I really am. What is really tough for me to get my head around is the fact that Maryland right now is struggling so much with fan support and building a fan base and making it fun to go to that stadium. But the only way they're ever going to get that is if they can pull off one of these big wins. If they can win that Ohio State game, if they could win that Ohio State game 2 weeks ago, that creates a moment that casual fans can rally around and say, hey, I took my family to that Ohio State game and it was awesome. My kids had so much fun. They upset Ohio State. They saw the students rush the field. It was something, you know, we'll remember for years. And why don't we all go to a game next year, right? And why don't I tell my friend, oh, it was a great experience. But right now, all that has ever happened at Maryland over the past in this Big Ten era is there's a big game that people are excited for and they get blown out. And they didn't get blown out against Michigan this year. They didn't get blown out against Ohio State, but they also didn't get the win. Nobody sits around and talks about that time that they almost beat Ohio State or they almost beat Michigan, except for fumbling the opening kickoff of the game. And they gotta just get if they could get one of these wins, the whole narrative and perception, I think both locally, which is most important for fan base perspective, but also nationally, I think would change a lot. There was a little bit of momentum this year at one point sitting at 6-2 about Maryland, but then 6-2 quickly turned into 6-5, and all that momentum from the college football world and that talk and excitement was gone. So I think it just really sucks that they couldn't get one of those wins. And I know, like, so we had a late night conversation about this last weekend with our whole group of friends, and some of us have very differing opinions on it, but for me, it's just, I'm appreciative and I'm happy for everything that has happened this year. It's been a fun season and there was fun games and fun times, but I want something. I'm craving something, and I think so many other people are as well. I'm craving a moment that you will remember in 5, 10, 15, 20 years from now, where I can tell Brian's son that, hey, Brian and I were at the Mohegan Sun watching the Terps basketball, and they pulled off this crazy upset against Ohio State, and you should have seen it. And Leah had an unbelievable performance, and Talia Tunga-Vailoa will be a name that kids remember 20 years from now. I am craving that, and we need a big moment for that to happen. So that's kind of where I am. It's complex, right? It's objectively good, and I'm happy, but I still think there's something that there's just a little bit more that would have made it great.
I think that's great. 10 out of 10, no notes.
It's just, it's tough. It's a tough situation, and it's a complex situation. We could talk about it for probably hours and hours. Okay, Brian, we are over time here. So let's just end this. Scrap some of the other things we had. Let's just end this with one championship Saturday look ahead thought. What do you got?
So this goes contrary to something you've said a few times in this episode, but it's in line with one of my predictions. So I agree that Caleb Williams is the Heisman frontrunner. My championship Saturday thought, if they drop it to Utah, is that I do believe that Max Duggan could win the Heisman Trophy on Saturday. Caleb Williams is out in front, but if they lose, I think it's the year for someone like him to do it. Like, a lot of these guys have kind of taken themselves out. CJ Stroud's not going to win it now, right? Like, I mean, maybe. Blake Corum got hurt. He's stumbling down the stretch. Caleb is, like, right now he's in the front position, right? But if they lose, if they don't make the playoff, and Max Duggan sitting here with 3,000 yards, he'll be at 30 touchdowns. He's only thrown like two or three picks. I think he'd be in an incredible position for it. And so I think that there's always going to be something working against a quote unquote smaller school quarterback, right? Not a traditional power. And I think that's happening this year too. But I think the way the chips are falling, it's actually feasible. Listen, if USC wins, I don't care if Caleb plays poorly, he's probably going to win it. Some chips have to fall to make this happen. But I got my eyes on that game, man, because if Duggan does find a way to go off and have unbeaten TCU in the playoff, I think he deserves to be right there.
Plus 2,500 on FanDuel, only four players listed: Caleb Williams, CJ Stroud, Max Duggan, Stetson Bennett. So plus 2,500, same odds as CJ Stroud. I really like the way you're thinking there. It's a perspective I really hadn't thought of at all. So are you going to, you gonna put a little cash down?
Yeah, I mean, I hadn't looked. I mean, that's pretty juicy for something that is, like, I don't think entirely unreasonable. So yeah, I think I will.
I love it, Brian. I think that's a outstanding perspective and outstanding thought for Championship Saturday. My Championship Saturday thought is, I am just extremely happy for Purdue Boilermaker fans, Brian. They are going to be making the short trip to Indy next week. Won the Big Ten West Division. They're going to play Michigan. They're probably not going to beat Michigan, but it's been an unbelievable weekend for Purdue fans. They're going to get to continue that next weekend with that trip to Indy. On Friday, their men's basketball team beats Gonzaga. On Saturday, they beat their biggest rival, Indiana, to win the division, clinch that trip to Indy. And on Sunday, today, they take down Duke. So two top 10 basketball wins and a football division championship in 3 days. What a Thanksgiving weekend. What a time to be a Boilermaker fan. And I got to imagine they are going to be rolling pretty deep in Indy. Not a far trip at all. Huge alumni base there. And I think they're going to have a good old time at Lucas Oil Stadium, even if they don't keep it too close with Michigan. So I'll be excited for them. I always love, like I said, with TCU, you know, new fan bases getting involved in the playoff. I just like fan bases as a Maryland fan. I like fan bases that don't traditionally have a lot of success getting to enjoy some of the fun things about college football playoffs. So that's kind of a feel good thing for me with the Boilers.
not just two top 10 basketball wins, two top 10 basketball blowout wins. I mean, they were both darn near 20 points. They won by 18 over Gonzaga and 19 over Duke. I mean, shoot, they're going to be in the top 10, top 15 the next time the rankings come out. So, yeah, shout out Purdue. I like it.
Yeah, Zach Edey, early candidate for player of the year. If you can find odds on him that are plus anything, do it, because that man at 7'4" is having one hell of a start to the season. So good time to be a Purdue Boilermaker, a good time to be a college sports fan. We got Championship Saturday ahead. We got Selection Sunday. We got bowl games. We got the playoffs, and we got college basketball season rounding into full form. We will have talk about all of that and more in the weeks ahead. I'm going to be making a list of bowl teams that I think are super motivated. Texas Tech at the top of my list. Got to get those bets in early because those bowl game odds move a lot. But that's one of the things I'm going to be working on. Who is motivated heading in the bowl season? We're going to be getting into some more basketball content here coming up soon as the season is really fully underway now with Feast Week. And obviously we have the playoffs still to go. So just a great time to be a college sports fan, a great time to be listening to Tailgates till May. That's our show. Look forward to talking to you again soon. Until next time, keep the grill hot and the cooler cold.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.